Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites onthisday.com and Britannica.com. Question number one. Whatever happened to the popular singer named Bobby Vinton? Was it A, he passed away on stage during a show in Las Vegas in 1995? Was it B, he just celebrated his 90th birthday in Florida? Was it C, he immigrated back to Poland in 2011, where he still lives today? Or was it D, he finally received a platinum record for the song Blue Velvet in 2020? Bobby Vinton, wherefore art thou anyway? And question number two, what is doo-wop music? Is it A, it's a subgenre of swing music that emerged in the early 1900s? B, doo-wop emphasizes ensemble singing and vocal group harmony? Is it C, it is instrumental music with a pronounced drum section? Is it D, it's represented by such artists as Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra? Or is it E, doo-wop emerged in the late 1990s as a type of rap music? Doo-wop, what it is anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April 25th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1891, that composer Sergei Prokofiev was born. He was known for such works as Peter and the Wolf and the ballet Romeo and Juliet. Russian composer Prokofiev, born today in 1891. And it was 50 years ago today, 1975, that B.J. Thomas had the longest title of a number one song at the top of the Billboard Popular Music Chart. The song title? Hey, Won't You Play Another Somebody Done Somebody Wrong Song. And that was 1975 today. And in country and folk music news, we have this review of Charlie Crockett's latest, his album, Lonesome Drifter, and it's given 3 out of 4 stars in The Week magazine on the 28th of March, 2025. Lonesome Drifter continues Charlie Crockett's white-hot run of records that are remarkably even-heeled, said Ben Salmon in Paste. Like his fellow Texans in Kruangabin, the 40-year-old country blues veteran is ultra-consistent, highly listenable, and effortlessly cool. On his first album with a major label after releasing 14 independently, he still shaking his claim where country, folk, and blues meet soul, and because self-reliance and a healthy suspicion of the man have been recurring themes in Crockett's songs, he gets only one song into this album before taking a shot at Nashville record execs. "You don't hear it from me," he sings. "They can't stand to see you free." With hooky songs about hardscrabble romance and life on the road, Crockett continues to advance his persona. "Rambling man, raconteur, philosopher," said John Amon in No Depression. "Drifter doesn't quite exude the magic of $10 Cowboy," the 2024 Crockett album that conjured Las Vegas as much as the Grand Ole Opry. Still, it does spotlight Crockett's consistency, as this is another set of deftly crafted songs that are as tried and true as Grandma's Pound Cake. Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Spring, introduces our classical music news. It's a continuation of the article we started. He rode his motorbike naked into the village. 15 very badly behaved composers. From Mozart to Peter Warlock, here are 15 composers who stepped out of the line, socially, sexually, or just with too much motorbike-based nudity. This is published in Classical Music, BBC Music Magazine, on the 25th of March, 2025. Here at BBC Music Magazine, we are constantly reminded how composers, past and present, operate on a different creative plane from us normal beings, and which of us, when enthralled to a sublime Sibelius symphony or miraculous Mozart mass, haven't concluded that such genius can only come from some sort of superhuman presence? Allow us to break the spell for a while. Of course, the great composers were all human. In fact, in terms of their faults and foibles, many of them were all too human. Vanity, greed, recklessness, temper, lust, you name it. As a collective group, there is scarcely a vice that composers haven't embraced in one way or another. By and large, most kept their unacceptable side fairly low-key. Some, however, really did push the boat of bad behavior out with gusto, such as these badly behaved composers. Today's list continues with Joseph Haydn, number 8. Bad behavior? Just some juvenile high spirits, really. Given his Papa nickname and reputation as all-round good egg, Haydn would be the last name one would expect to find in a list of composers behaving badly. But that would be to overlook his naughty streak, evident both in a number of his compositions and more manifestly in an episode from his youth. In 1849, the 17-year-old Haydn found himself expelled from school when he decided it would be a good idea to cut off a fellow pupil's pigtail. Good lad, we approve. Then, at number 9, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. His bad behavior, like Haydn, Mozart just liked a joke. As befits a pupil of Haydn, Mozart was also a great practical joker. Take, for instance, the fun he had during a run of his magic flute at Vienna's Freihaus Theater. In a letter to his wife Constance, Mozart submitted sneaking backstage and sabotaging the great Emanuel Schikaneder, as the latter sang. Went up on the magic bells, Mozart, playing the Glockenspiel in the wings, went down, and vice versa. Then he stopped playing altogether, leaving Schikaneder silently miming. Finally, he came in when Schikaneder wasn't playing, causing the actor to bellow, "Shut up!" into the wings. Number 10, George Frederick Handel. Bad behavior, anger management issues. More fun and games, but this time with composer as victim rather than perpetrator. Handel's rages were legendary, and his ear was so sensitive that he couldn't hear an orchestra tuning up. Consequently, musicians were required to tune well ahead of the maestro's arrival in the concert hall. On one occasion, this proved to be too tempting for one wag, who sneaked in and untuned some of the instruments while the musicians were off having a drink. When Handel arrived and the orchestra struck up, the cacophony was so distressing to the composer that he tore off his wig and advanced on the unfortunate musicians, fists flying, oh dear. Then there was Arnold Bach's bad behavior. Very much not the monogamous type, our Arnold. Write down all the composers who were unfaithful to their partners, and you'll rapidly reach the end of your sheet of A4. The likes of Debussy, Delius, and Wagner would undoubtedly be near the top of most people's lists. However, when it comes to raising infidelity to a whole new level, Arnold Bax remains peerless. With love nests coated around the country, the composer proudly marked his most famous affair with the 19-year-old Harriet Cohen by depicting it in music. The action portrayed in the 1917 symphonic poem November Woods may begin with Bax and Cohen quaintly sheltering from the storm in a copse, but it soon moves into a cozy hotel room nearby. You can guess the rest. T-Bone Walker's Stormy Monday introduces our blues music news. This is titled Blues Songs, 10 of the Greatest of All Time. Paul McGinnis explores the best blues songs of all time from some of the genre's greatest artists. This is published in BBC Music Magazine, November 30th, 2022. Paul McGinnis. Blues music gets its name from its original association with melancholy subjects and sounds. It originated in the Deep South after the U.S. Civil War in the 19th century, evolving from the oral tradition of African-American work songs and spirituals, and became popular in the 1920s. Here are some of the best blues songs of all time.
Winter's worse. Thirst is also sad.
Coming up first in this article is Crossroads Blues by Robert Johnson. According to legend, the budding bluesman Robert Johnson is said to have sold his soul to the devil at a crossroads in exchange for mastery of the blues. This seems unlikely, and Johnson probably mastered his craft after studying under his mentors, Willie Brown, Charlie Patton, and Son House. Regardless, the story of the crossroads remains the great blues legend. Then there's Hoochie Coochie Man, Muddy Waters. It might seem incongruous that the father of Chicago blues was actually from Mississippi. Born McKinley Morganfield Muddy, traveled north seeking fame and fortune in 1943, bringing a harder electric style to the Windy City, which would in turn be a huge influence on rock and roll. Hoochie Coochie Man was one of Waters' most famous songs and regarded as a classic of Chicago blues. Then there's Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground. This is by Blind Willie Johnson. If aliens are looking for life on Earth, then this stunning recording from the blues-singing evangelist from Texas may point them in the right direction. Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground is one of 27 recordings selected for the Voyager Golden Records, which were loaded aboard the Voyager spacecraft and launched into space in 1977. As such, it is the first blues record to leave our solar system. And last but not least for this article, I'm a King Bee by Slim Harpo. This Louisiana blues guitar player was one of the key exponents of the swamp blues style, as well as being a pioneer of the blues harp, or blues harmonica. Originally released on the B-side to Slim's 1957 single, I Got Love If You Want It, I'm a King Bee was honored with a Grammy Hall of Fame Award in 2008. And in music research and technology, we have this special series, COVID 5 years later, How the Pandemic Changed Music. This is written by Isabella Gomez Sarmiento et al. In NPR.org on the 15th of March, 2025. The global coronavirus pandemic, when it arrived in our lives 5 years ago this week, affected the world of music in basically the same way it did everything else. Musicians froze their lives and retreated into quarantine like the rest of us. They canceled in-person events. They learned how to use Zoom. Some of them probably baked bread. Too many of them died. In some ways, the pandemic shrank the distance between those of us who considered ourselves listeners and those who thought of themselves as makers of music. During the first few months, some of us, lacking familiar comforts, took it upon ourselves to learn to play or sing or dance as a way to fill empty rooms or social media feeds. Soon we found that pop stars were doing the same thing, some reimagining their careers. Next to the unifying moments that music enabled, the pandemic also showed two basic things to be true. First, it made clear just how easy our access to music is now. It is truly a nearly infinite jukebox. And second, it proved that effortless access to the glorious archive of recorded music could not compensate for the absence of people creating music in our lives. Looking back 5 years later, it's easy to see how much about the music world has been transformed. Here are five ways the pandemic reordered how we listen. 1. Touring stopped suddenly and restarted slowly. 2. Quarantine reshaped the album release cycle. 3. Pandemic became an emotion. 4. DJs, producers, and rappers turned the couch into the club. And 5. We mourned when we could not gather. And each of these five effects of the pandemic on music is then expanded upon by five separate writers in this NPR.org article. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, whatever happened to the popular singer named Bobby Vinton? Was it A, he passed away on stage during a show in Las Vegas in 1995? Was it B, he just celebrated his 90th birthday in Florida? Was it C, he immigrated back to Poland in 2011, where he still lives today? Or was it D, he finally received a platinum record for the song Blue Velvet in 2020? Correct answer? Answer B. He just celebrated his 90th birthday in Englewood, Florida, where he lives with his family. Vinton and his wife Dolores, who have been married since 1962 and have 5 children. And as noted in Britannica.com, after serving in the U.S. Army, he led a band in the Pittsburgh area that toured and performed on television. And in 1960, a local disc jockey helped him land a contract with Epic Records. Initially, Vinton recorded 2 albums of mostly instrumental big band music in the mold of Lawrence Welk, but they sold poorly. In an attempt to salvage his contract, he persuaded Epic to let him try his hand as a solo crooner. The decision paid off. As Roses Are Red, My Love, a country-tinged ode to young romance, reached number 1 on the Billboard Singles Chart in 1962. He also topped the chart with the straightforward emotional ballads, Blue Velvet, 1963, There I've Said It Again, in 1963, and Mr. Lonely, 1964, the latter of which he co-wrote. By the end of 1964, Vinton's brand of orchestra-backed pop had established him as one of the top recording artists in the United States. Singing partially in Polish as an homage to his ethnic heritage, he attracted a new audience, many of them Polish Americans, for whom he became known as the Polish Prince. He then parlayed his resurgent fame into a stint as host of the Bobby Vinton Show, 1975 to 1978, a syndicated television variety program. Vinton's recording career waned in the following decades, but he remained active on the concert circuit. In 1993, he opened the Bobby Vinton Blue Velvet Theater in Branson, Missouri, where he performed regularly with the Glenn Miller Orchestra for nearly 10 years. And from another, what question? What is doo-wop music? That was question number 2. Well, okay. That was it A? It's a subgenre of swing music that emerged in the early 1900s. Was it B? Doo-wop emphasizes ensemble singing and vocal group harmony. Was it C? It's an instrumental music with a pronounced drum section. How about D? It is represented by such artists as Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra? Or is it E? Doo-wop emerged in the late 1990s as a type of rap music. Correct answer? Answer B. Doo-wop emphasizes ensemble singing and vocal group harmony. An article in Masterclass.com notes that doo-wop is characterized by groups featuring a lead vocalist who is usually a tenor or a soprano, supported by lower voice bass singers. The backup singers in doo-wop groups typically use nonsensical syllables, the doo-wop, doo-wop, wah-wah-wah-wah, as background instrumentation. Many doo-wop groups eschew instruments and use only their voices to highlight the vocal harmonies of the group. If they're not singing a cappella, they may be very light or simple background instrumentation, and doo-wop lyrics are typically very simple and easy to enunciate. Dating, love, longing, marriage, and heartbreak are typical subject matter for doo-wop songs. And as noted in Britannica.com, the roots of doo-wop style can be found as early as the records of the Mills Brothers and the Ink Spots in the 1930s and 1940s. Motown's premier male group of the 60s and 70s, the Temptations, had a vocal sound that was based in the classic doo-wop style. There also was a school of female doo-wop, best exemplified by the Chantels, the Shirelles, and Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells. The popularity of doo-wop music among young singers in urban U.S. communities of the 1950s was due in large part to the fact that the music could be performed effectively a cappella. Doo-wop groups tended to rehearse in locations that provided echoes where their harmonies could best be heard, like in hallways and high school bathrooms and under bridges. Doo-wop's appeal for much of the public lay in its artistically powerful simplicity, but this uncomplicated type of record also was an ideal low-budget investment for a small record company to produce. The absence of strings and horns sweetening in their production gave many of the doo-wop records of the early 50s an almost haunting spareness. Crying in the Chapel, 1953. A Sunday Kind of Love, 1953. Earth Angel, 1954, are excellent examples of this effect. A number of white singing groups adopted the doo-wop style also, including the Elegants, Little Star, in 1958, Dion and the Belmonts, I Wonder Why, in 1958, and the Four Seasons, Sherry, 1962. Ultimately, the musical power of doo-wop has flowed from the original groups through the Motown music of the 60s and the Philly sound of the 70s and continued into urban contemporary music of the 1990s. So, let's close out today's program with a classic doo-wop song from 1956. Here's Frankie Lyman's answer to the question, why do fools fall in love? Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.